Alignment is about balancing the motion with the also the chemistry. So we do biomechanical and biochemical alignment. And you can't fix your mechanics if your chemistry is off, and vice versa.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and Kenny Kane. We have traveled up to Venice Beach. We are hanging out at the Human Garage, and we're here with the co-founder, Gary Lineham. And this is the Mind-Body Repair and Alignment. And the interesting thing is I've been hearing about this place for about a year. And it was my crazy friends that were talking about it. You know who you are. they were like, dude, you got to go. It's awesome. Da, da, da. I'm like,
you calling our clients crazy?
Some of them, yeah, because I'm friends with them. Like, I know them. And, and I was like, oh, it sounds interesting. But then I kept hearing about once a month, oh, yeah, someone else is coming through my home who's like, yeah, I just left the Human Garage. And I go online, and I can't find any information. But you guys are underground.
We are underground, and on purpose. It's
being not anymore, though.
So part of the reason why is we didn't have the ability to fulfill the demand that was already there. So it was a lot easier for us to take down the website and just stop the calls. And over the last 2 years, we've been developing a therapy that's completely new and putting it into practice with protocols and procedures and stuff like that so we could train and have more practitioners. Our practitioners are called motion mechanics because we analyze and repair motion. Whatever doesn't work when you're walking is something that needs to be fixed. And basically, we can, through looking at the human body in motion, we can find and repair anything, or find anything that needs to be repaired and then apply a repair to it.
Yeah, so for any of you that think that this is a typical place to get therapy, I just had his hands in my mouth and he was massaging the inside of my face. And then I walked better afterwards, so.
That wasn't part of the treatment. That was just that was before you got started.
Part of the assessment in the back room.
The assessment.
Call me into this broom
Come
closet.
Come into the back room, Mike.
The lights don't work. Don't worry about that.
Mike just got his pants back on. Yeah. Separate story.
Yeah, I mean, the movement world, like, we come from weightlifting, powerlifting, you know, sports performance. Movement is a huge part of that. Optimal movement, good technique, et cetera, et cetera. People are used to going to chiropractors. People are used to getting body work done, massage therapy, physical therapy, et cetera. This seems to be a lot different than the same old thing that I've seen over and over and over and over and over again, meeting with chiros and physios and orthos. This is not a normal place to get treatment, in my opinion. What makes this different than just going to a chiro or a PT?
Well, first of all, I mean, we use the word alignment, and a lot of times we misuse the word alignment. Alignment's misused in a lot of places. So, first of all, it starts with alignment. Alignment is about balancing the motion with also the chemistry. So we do biomechanical and biochemical alignment. And you can't fix your mechanics if your chemistry is off, and vice versa. So that's the first and foremost. And being able to put people in a situation where they are able to actually continue to walk and feel good in their walking and their motion. And one of the things that you mentioned before about going to chiropractors and physical therapists, one of the key points or differences we have is we see people through an entire cycle. And a treatment cycle for us today, right now, a single appointment is 2 hours. And it just can't be done unless, you know, going in for 30 minutes for a session or 20 minutes or 15 minutes, you're going to create a change. If you come into me and I touch your body and 15 minutes later you leave, an hour, hour and a half, 6 hours later, something's going to change. But in that first hour, hour and a half, there's so much changes. You have to be able to analyze what the changes are and to help the body adapt to those changes. Because just bottom line is, we also look for the point of origin. So in medicine, we're generally taught to look for a diagnosis. And a diagnosis in itself is actually a symptom. And so we look for a diagnosis and we treat a diagnosis. We end up treating symptoms. So what we're looking for is cause. And one of the biggest things that we don't do is we don't diagnose. So we're fixing and repairing the whole body, and we're starting at cause, and we look at motion as a template And if whatever is wrong in motion shows in the body shows up in the motion somehow. So it's a matter of really, really looking at where that problem is and going to that problem and working backwards from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were saying earlier that, you know, if somebody comes in with shoulder pain, you're not necessarily going to just treat the shoulder. You're gonna go from there.
100%. We will not treat shoulder pain. We won't treat an ankle pain. We won't treat a tennis elbow. We treat the entire body. Because if I make one change in one part, as you guys saw today, all we did is a little work on upper body and your face and your jaw, specifically only like two groups of muscles, and your posture changed. The way you stood changed. The way you walked changed. So if that much impact comes from one motion or one adaptation in the body, then to think that we can isolate and work on your shoulder without affecting something else is crazy.
Yeah.
One of the things that really struck me, Gary, is I came in about a month ago, maybe a little over a month ago, and I've been talking to the boys about this, is this collaborative integration that you have amongst the team, and that was one of the things that really struck me as part of your practice. Like just walking in, you've got yourself looking at me and two other people looking at me simultaneously, and then throughout the session, there's two or three people communicating, talking about like this whole being and trying to fix, you know, multiple pieces, but through that network of communication. And I think that's one of the things, like as Mike opens the show and talks about this as being a mind-body repair and alignment shop, and you sort of described that. I think a lot of our listeners are going to understand that as like these, okay, you've got fascial therapies, you've got skeletal therapies, you've got neuromuscular stuff going on. And what you're doing is you're kind of integrating all these things.
Yes.
And then also there's a chemical composition as well. Can you describe what you sort of put me through and the boys through, just so
sure.
that we don't get too far into, and I know that are we going to show the pictures of like our assessments?
Yeah.
To everybody?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sure. I guess when you see the pictures, then that starts to make one of the things that we first of all need to do is sometimes you can feel something and not see it. And sometimes you can see something and not feel it. We mm-hmm. have different senses. And also when I work with one individual, I have my own prejudice and my own beliefs and stuff like that. And sometimes they interfere with me helping somebody. So having more than one person look at somebody at the same time allows us to make sure that the person gets the treatment they need. And it's not prejudiced by my opinion, my backgrounds, my beliefs. I always have a reference point, and that's really important because the body is a fluid moving organism, and it's always changing. And sometimes I don't change at the exact same speed that you do, Mike. And if
Kenny.
I'm – or sorry.
It's okay.
I did that twice.
That's all right.
Sometimes I don't change.
I would need a lot more drugs to be Mike.
So sometimes I don't change. My thought process isn't changing as fast as your nervous system is, and it requires a second look.
One of the things I noticed, I thought it was just special for us. When we walked in, there was like a team of people working with us.
Yes.
It was you and another guy, and all of a sudden this third guy jumped in, and then someone else was like, oh, yeah, did you see that? And then I noticed that other people were getting treatment in the room. The same exact thing was happening.
Yes.
That was pretty cool. I've never had that happen when getting treatment.
Well, that's back to that point of isolation. I think, first of all, let me clarify what we have here. We have medical doctor, we have chiropractic, we have massage therapy, we have neurological physical therapist, we have trainers, we have motion mechanics, which is the body work portion of what we do. And then on top of that, we have all the support staff. And each one of those people interact with our clients in through the course of their protocol here. But sometimes a good portion of them are interacting with a client every day. It's like a motion mechanic, a massage therapist, and a chiropractor. Almost in every session, you're going to see them or talk to them, or there's going to be some interaction, and we're always checking. We're fluid. Things change. And if you came in last week and you come in this week, it's often going to be different than it was last week. So we have to constantly be reevaluating the body. I can't build a therapy protocol and put you on it and expect you in 8 weeks to have that same therapeutic needs 8 weeks from now or 7 weeks from now as you did this week. So the idea is it's constant evaluation, and multiple people from multiple disciplines are doing it. The one common point, though, is we have a common set of beliefs about how the human body works, how inside and outside balance is important, and the do's and don'ts of what for the human body. And since we all operate with those beliefs, and this is multidisciplined, so our nutritionist, our medical doctor, our chiropractor, and our body workers and massage therapist all have the same basic set of beliefs. And if that helps the person get through this program without getting different information. I don't know about you guys, but I've been around and I've been to tons of therapists and tons of therapy, and everybody gave me a different viewpoint. And very seldom were they ever the same. And so it was my job in managing my own chronic issues, trying to understand which one was the one I needed. And no one was helping me do that adaptation. So what we are is we're helping those people make that adaptation because we know better. And collectively, if we're on the same page, we can really help somebody.
Yeah. What are some of those beliefs that are common amongst all your practitioners?
Well, one of them is, first one is that the brain really isn't in charge of the body. And there's a lot of mounting science to prove that. I don't want to have that argument or that discussion because that one really ruffles a lot of feathers. But there's a lot of mounting science that proves that's not true. The second one is...
Sorry, I know we don't need to dive deep in that, but just roughly what does that mean? Is that like a conscious versus subconscious thing?
Well, it could be conscious. Well, there's a couple things. Harvard Medical released a report saying that trauma is stored in the fascial network. So the fascia is in the body. So literally what they're saying without saying it is that your subconscious is where we store our trauma. And so basically the body is the subconscious and the brain is the consciousness. And without pushing the envelope too far, let's just say that's a theory that we work with. And the other one is that you can't balance the biomechanics if the biochemistry is off. And it's real simple. It's like people here, we have a variety of things that go on in our society. Bad food, bad jobs, lots of stress, all those things that are impacting our body. And
then if you're in LA, there's definitely the environmental pollution.
Environmental pollution, yeah. All those things. And you know, so for example... One of the things that we don't realize is that if you've been taking antibiotics, as an example, and your liver and you've been drinking and doing your normal thing, your liver's struggling to keep up. So when your liver struggles to keep up, one of the things that's hard for the liver to do is to metabolize protein. And then all of a sudden you have aches and pains. Like I'm a little achy, my joints are achy, I don't recover good in the morning, stuff like that. And so the fact that you're not absorbing protein properly means that your muscles don't recover when you work out, and they tighten up when you sleep at night. Amongst all the other things, adrenals, kidneys, liver, how we digest food, those all have an impact on how our mechanics and how our brain works. And so we have to address all of them. And if somebody's not willing to address all of them, they're probably not our client. And that's really what we're looking for, people who really want to be aligned both inside and outside.
Yeah, so I know I've done this a lot, and I know a lot of people do, is they count how many grams of protein they're getting a day. And, you know, I'll get this many grams of protein, this many carbs, this many fats. And what I'm hearing you say, that description of what's happening with the liver, even if you're getting, you know, 150 grams today, that could be completely different than what it was a week ago, depending on what your body's been through.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you put a load on your liver and your protein and carbohydrate metabolism is going to be different. So it's having an understanding of how your body works. But you can't really understand how your body works till we get it to a baseline. Because we need a point of reference, right? And that's why we test people in mechanics. We test them, and then we do an activity, and then we test them again. We're looking for points of reference. So why don't we do that with the entire body rather than just one part of the body?
Yeah. That's also why you guys are doing blood work with your clients?
Well,
you take labs and
so
the numbers?
We do some blood work, but we start off with subclinical testing. And this is really important because if you think about how healthcare works in Western medicine and even Eastern medicine practiced in North America, we look at clinical testing. Okay, clinical means blood, literally. It's the end result. And then subclinical is below the blood or before the blood. And if I was to give you an example how that impacts you as a human being, let me use a car analogy since we're at a garage. Okay? So simply, clinical would be how fast is your car moving? It's going 60 miles an hour. Okay, so let's compare you to everybody else. We'll put you on the freeway. Everybody's doing 60. You're doing 60. You're within range. So you're healthy. They're not really saying you're healthy. What they're saying is you're not sick. And there's a difference between being healthy and not sick. Since we only measure sickness in our healthcare system, really measures sickness, there's no indication of, like for example, it takes 15, 20, 30 years to develop an autoimmune disease. But we don't actually diagnose it until it actually is. But it didn't happen in 1 year or 1 month. It happened over 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
So what we look at, first of all, is subclinical testing. And we test the way the subclinical would look from a car perspective is not how fast you're driving, but how fast is your engine running. Because if your engine's running 10,000 RPM at 60 miles an hour or 2,000 RPM, there's a big difference in how we're going to handle you as a client. And that's the first thing that we know. And then if there's something more significant, then we move into other standard medical or clinical tests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really unfortunate that it works that way. It's much harder to reverse a chronic disease state that took decades to develop than it is to simply prevent it in the first place. And it seems like you guys are much further down the prevention track.
So we've done about 2,000 lab tests and subclinical lab tests, and over 50% of the people that we test. First of all, normally you go to get a lab test when you go to a doctor, and you go to a doctor because you're sick. Typical, that's how they do it, right?
It's the only time I show up.
Yeah. So, but that's the wrong time to go to the doctor, right?
Our, oh, shit.
Yeah.
My wife is right.
Again.
So the idea is if you're going to go to do a lab test, what we want to do is we want to have a fairly good idea of what's going on in your body first before we start trying to decide how we're going to help you. And I'll give you a real example. Is a guy yesterday had come in, muscles don't want to release, tight pain, just general back pain, general leg pain. And it's overall level 5 pain. It's been like that for 10 years. And so there's no amount of body work that's helping this guy. When his lab work comes in, then we see that he's chronically dehydrated. Mm. Really, really big problem. You know who's chronically dehydrated? Watch in the gyms, the guys who carry around white bottles of water, jugs of water. Because water and sodium have to be in balance for us to be hydrated. And when we're chronically hydrated, sometimes it takes 2 months, 3 months to actually dehydrate our bodies back up. Mm. And knowing that as a case helps us help the client understand what to do. But more importantly, it helps us helps us understand what we need to do for the client. So it's a matter of just having all the information before we start work.
Yeah. What got you into this?
Chronic pain. Yeah. I was a bodybuilder. I was an amateur bodybuilder. Qualified professional, never competed professional, but qualified as a professional. And this back in the 80s, I fell under a squat and I managed my back problem that I had from that squat. And it was a 600 pound squat, like any young kid, kind of stupid, thought I could do it. It was one rep maximum, see if I could do it. And I fell over backwards and this way.
Oy. That's the best way to fall with 600 pounds.
the best way is not to fall. So that back injury plagued me, and you know, like when I was in my 20s, I would go out once a year, and I'd be out, and I'd manage it through exercise and stretching. One of the things I noticed was funny, was that if I wasn't exercising, my back would act up. So why was that? It's because I was strengthening my core against the torquing, and the problem existed and never went away. The tightness in a certain part of my body caused the torquing. And so as long as I was working out and doing my core, I felt good. The second I stopped, all of a sudden there's a problem. And it started showing up.
I've been
up.
There.
That's a really common, yeah.
common.
Experience, in
yeah.
my opinion.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then so fast forward that, it would go up once a year, then twice a year, then three times a year. Then all of a sudden, 1 year, it's like 10 times and my back goes out. And and each time, sometimes between 1 and 2 weeks, so almost half the year in bed.
Right.
And
wow.
And that was when I decided that my life had to change, because I was no longer able to manage my compensations and my injuries and the injury cycle through exercise, stretching, chiropractic, physical therapy, and they weren't working anymore. As a matter of fact, to the other side, I was getting worse with each and every treatment. And so I went off on a mission, and I literally have done every form of treatment that I've ever heard of or ever known, and lots of ones that I hadn't heard of. I got to the point where I had guys blowing smoke on me and chanting and all kinds of things because I was so desperate just to feel normal again.
We've all been there.
And really, the goal, what we're trying to do is we're just trying to feel normal for the first time. And what does normal feel like? Well, that's what we want. We want to get people back to that feeling of normality. And once they're there, then they have a baseline and they know when something's going wrong. We give them the tools to fix it. And themselves, or an indicator that something's wrong, so they don't let a little problem become a big problem. And it's more about educating people about their bodies. So the other thing that happened in that 20 years of trying to fix myself was people gave me different opinions. Every professional I went to, and everybody I knew, because I had a chronic issue, every friend I knew had a solution, because they had a special guy who got them out of a problem. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, it just was a malaise in my mind, and I didn't know where to go. And as I got more and more dysfunctional, it actually starts to change cognition, because the brain, the job of the brain and the body is to evaluate the internal and external environment and then adapt the body to that environment. So when my liver's off and my kidneys are off and my muscles are tight, the brain perceives tightness and all these malfunctions as noise. And these are the noise that we go to try to sedate. That's why a couple glasses of wine or scotch at the end of the day feels really good, because we got all this activity going on, all this communication to our brain, and our brain's like, oh, shut up, I've had too much. And that's what was going on with me, and I know that's going on with other people because we see that literally 99% of the times when people come through here.
Yeah.
So a lot of cognitive fog for the people that are coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So cognitive issues are related to body issues. And, well, let me ask you guys, after our treatment, we did 15, 20 minutes of treatment, how did you feel?
Really good. I felt clear, but you also gave me those little
curcumin,
you know, yellow pills.
We can talk about that. But
yeah, I thought that was E at first, but yeah, it didn't really hit me like that. I was
pretty disappointed. It started off there.
I felt so happy.
Mike's like, I feel the cool sensation starting, but nobody's dancing.
That's right.
So the idea is that when you calm the, so what happens is as our body, when a muscle's tight. Let's talk about what happens. A muscle gets tight, it sends a signal to the brain, says I'm tight. And the brain then tries to resolve it. And the way it tries to resolve it is it gives us a little boost. And what's that boost? Adrenaline, noradrenaline, norepinephrine. Stress hormones. Get up, do something. Mm-hmm. And then if we can't fix it, the brain just shuts off awareness to it. The problem doesn't go away and the signal doesn't stop. But the conscious brain no longer recognizes it. So the conscious brain can only understand and deal with three pains at any given time. The fourth one becomes unaware, and that's called subclinical pain. And everybody has about 70, 80 little aches and pains, and they're just not aware of them. And so what happens is, and you know what's funny, because our clientele, like yours, Kenny, is a lot of celebrities. So we have a lot of industry people. So I'm sitting here having the conversation because our whole process is to educate our clients on the table. And the guy's a sound engineer. He's mixing sound for Star Wars. And I tell him this, and he goes, that's funny, because I can only mix actually three sounds into a movie. If I mix a fourth one in, it's white noise.
Mm.
And that's the first time I ever heard that back. But what that was saying to me is it's the same thing that happens to our brain. The fourth sound or noise is white noise. So we get all this white noise, and that's what causes the malaise in our brain. So all these signals going to our brain 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, saying, fix me. And then our network, it's our neural network, just like anything else, gets overloaded. And as it gets overloaded, cognitive function dismisses. The brain robs energy from your senses, sight, touch, sound. And so basically your senses narrow, taking energy away from that so it can focus on the problem.
And then maladaptive movement patterns too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, I have had this experience where we were talking a minute ago about trauma being stored in the fascia.
Yeah.
And I've had experiences of emotional trauma being stored in the body.
Yeah.
And then you heal that emotional trauma and all of a sudden you actually see things differently.
Correct.
Like,
yes.
That sunset you see that night
is much better.
It's like, oh, I've never seen a sunset before. That was interesting.
Well, so that's back to the point. The brain perceives, the brain's job is to evaluate the body, and it's looking in all these things like these muscular problems, there's nervous system problems, digestive problems. They're like putting on layers of glasses, like mm-hmm. tints and glasses. Mm-hmm. If you keep putting too many shades on, eventually you can't see anything.
Yeah.
And that's that progression. The reason why it's so hard for us to understand this is this happens over decades, not over days. And so what the job of the brain is to normalize our situation. So if it can't fix something, it just makes it normal.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard for us to understand, because our brain's always making things normal. And what we do is we start at the process and we wake the brain up. And in making things normal, we shut off awareness to things that the brain can't fix. So by re-engaging and then resolving those issues, removing trauma from the fascia or the body, then what happens is the brain starts to be re-engaged again.
Yeah.
And what that does to the person is instantaneous increase in cognition and performance. And it's noticeable at every single treatment, and that's why we didn't have a website and a sign and stuff like that, because when people feel good, they tell people about it. That's
right.
Really what it comes to.
Yeah, that's how I came to you.
That's right.
I mean, we share a mutual client, and he was really insistent that I get in and just see you, just so you know, I understood what he was doing with you. But then also our conversations are very similar as far as like trying to look at this thing holistically. But what you've got here is a very – very sophisticated approach. I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking about like Joe Dispenza's book, all the fascial work that's been coming out over the last 20 years. And then the very rapid sort of understanding with biomechanics over the last, 15, 20 years, but all that's like being chunked into one very elaborate, smooth thing here.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the name The Human Garage? I mean,
that's funny.
That almost sounds like if people don't know, you might as well be some German guy going, yes, come to the human garage. We may touch you like this. Just relax.
So let's take a break, and then we'll hear that. Oh, yeah, okay. For sure.
So the name Human Garage, that's an interesting one. So I had a clinic, two clinics actually, one in Beverly Hills, one in Orange County. And they were focused around stress and anxiety as a sports medicine, neuromuscular therapy. And we were trying to figure out why this therapy, I had a therapy that was keeping me, maintaining me, and I did it twice a week. And we were trying to figure out why, for me, it only worked twice a week. Or why I had to do it twice a week. Why do I have to repeat it? Why could everybody else, we do a therapy, they walk away, and 6 months later, they're still good. And why is it me? It lasted like 3 days. And the answer to that question, we started working in the clinic, but it was really, really obvious that what we were doing wasn't the same as everybody else in the clinic. And so instead of creating a distraction in the clinic, we went home to my garage every day in Venice, and we practiced because we just had this belief that we were missing something. And we had a single discovery about how muscle, one particular muscle, the adductor, how it actually impacted the body. And that discovery was really, really crazy because my right adductor was wound up, and it literally wound up like a rope. And it took like about 6 hours to release it. But when we released it, my whole body changed. And so that was the start of it. But this is the funny part was we took our first client in the garage. Because people used to walk by all the time. We lived by a rec center. And this guy that had back surgery, and people would, you know, like, you guys, massage therapist, sign me up for the massage, all the stupid things people would say on the way by. This one guy had back, he came in, he had back surgery, but he wasn't out of pain. And he'd had back pain for 10 years. And so eventually he says, I think this will work for me. And we just kind of finished what we thought was a protocol and we called it a posture correction protocol. And it was 4 sessions. So we said, 4 sessions, posture correction protocol. You can start tomorrow. So we actually treated him in the garage. Then he told a few people, and they all of a sudden, we went from the garage to an apartment, just because it's a little hot outside, and it's in Venice in summertime. And then with like crazy, my phone started ringing. And within 3 months, there was about 150 people. Within 6 months, 300 people a month were coming to a 900 square foot apartment in Venice. They would literally knock on the door and say, I heard about you from such and such. I got your address. Can you help me? Or they would call my phone all day long. And we had no systems. We had no protocols, no scheduling software. We just had tables up. And literally, I ripped all the furniture out of a 900-square-foot apartment, and the three of us went to work. We were there for a better part of a year and a half in an apartment just trying to figure this out. And in the meantime, we were helping a lot of people. But to be honest and truthful, that was our experimentation. We were helping people, and they were getting benefit. But through each and every treatment, we saw repeating patterns. And those patterns became part of a therapy that exists today.
So what are some of the most common things that you guys have corrected in the past, and what does it look like to fix those problems?
You mean like common ailments?
Yeah, people come to you with back pain or shoulder pain or they just low energy or whatever.
It's all of those, and that's why it's so hard to be specific. Like, we don't fix shoulders, we don't fix elbows, we don't fix knees, we don't fix digestion. We repair the human body. When you realign the posture in the human body and you realign the chemistry in the human body, everything just seems to work well. And things that aren't working well seem to have a chance to heal themselves. You know, our body really has only two specific modes, parasympathetic, which is rest and recover, and sympathetic, which is fight or flight. And there's no gray area. Either you're in fight or flight, or you're in rest and recover. Most of us are in fight or flight 24 hours a day. And that's probably upwards of 90% of the population. For a lot of reasons, digestive issues, immune issues, back pain, neck pain. If you're going to sleep and your neck is out, and you roll around, you keep waking up, you can't even get sleep. So taking somebody and realigning their posture gives the body the chance to do what it's supposed to do. We firmly believe one of our founding beliefs was the human body was designed to heal itself. We didn't have doctors, you know, 3,000 years ago. So how did people work? I used to sit and watch things like Game of Thrones and said, man, what would happen if that happened to me? like, where would I go? And the idea that the human body, there had to have been things in our past that we did that we don't do today. You know, the barefoot running is you know, picked up a lot of momentum because of what it does. Well, we were designed to walk 60,000 steps a day. And we're designed to walk approximately 10 or 11 miles a day.
Fitbit, almost.
Dude, yeah. I float between 15 and 30.
That's awesome. Because that's a way that the body – walking is a way that the body biomechanically rebalances itself.
But I'm on flat surface too, so I'm almost good.
Well, that's it's still not bad. I mean, but the whole point is that the average person's walking less than 2,000 steps today. Mm. And interestingly enough, do you know that the incidence of back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, ankle pains, all that stuff in New York is 40% less than it is in L.A.?
Because they walk.
Mm. Everybody walkers. Walks.
What
yeah.
about San Francisco? Do you know any stats on San Francisco?
No, I don't. It's just
a similar city.
Yes, it would be similar. But the idea is that you can there was a graph that I looked at which was literally – it talked about the decline of walking. And it showed – and the graph had a sharp drop down this way. So on the x-angle saying this is the steps that people walk. The converse opposing graph was the amount of body pain, disease, and dysfunction in the body. And there was even a guy, a scientist, who wrote a book called Walk Your Blues Away. He's a PhD. Did a long study. Mm. And he talked about how walking, a very, very articulated study, talked about how walking even dealt with depression. Mm-hmm. And that was the primary mechanism. And so one of the things, we walk or we don't walk anymore. That's a big problem. The next thing is we sit down. When we sit, we actually crush our diaphragm. And the body has to do three things well in order for us to function. We have to be able to respirate, we have to be able to digest, and we have to be able to sleep. Any one of those is compromised, and the rest, it's like a house of cards comes tumbling down. So we're designed to squat, you know, like this. And when we squat, we open up our, first of all, you force this diaphragmatic breathing when you squat. You can't breathe through your shoulders. Second of all, when you squat, it opens up your hips. For mobility, because we're supposed to be in motion, we defecate this way. We are actually we give birth this way. If you go to China right now, my nephew's over in China. We have factories over there, family business. He's working, and since I told him this, he always sends pictures of guys in suits. He'll go to a train station and be 50 guys squatting like this talking. We just don't do these. Those are two of the major things mechanically that we no longer do well. And if we take something out of a routine that's designed to balance the body, we need to add something in as a compensatory mechanism. And since we don't walk and we sit too much, then the workouts and the stretches and the exercises that we need to do have to take that into account, and we don't.
Yeah.
Think about yoga. Yoga is thousands of years old, but thousands of years ago, people walked around and didn't eat all this bad food. And so we are just generally, and you guys are dealing with this, and especially in sports and when people are working out, is that their anterior chain is tight. Mm-hmm. And when the anterior chain is tight, it pulls the neck forward, shoulders forward, and puts all the weight onto the quads and the shins and the balls of the feet, causing knee problems, shoulder problems, neck problems, stuff like that. If we were to think about it, if I did it stretching completely balanced, every muscle balanced in my body, then I would just be that much more unbalanced. Everything would be, am I saying that the right way?
Yeah, we're tracking.
Okay. So if you're stretching all the muscles in your body, you're not actually doing anything corrective.
Right. You need to stretch the ones that are tight, not all of them.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. So many people just stretch.
Yeah.
But are you wasting your time stretching a hamstring that's not short when you could be stretching, a hip flexor that actually is?
Correct. And so part of our process is to rebalance people and then teach them these things, and more importantly, teach them about their bodies. If somebody – when somebody comes in and says, just fix me, again, they're not our client. Our clients are – we're talking to them. We're explaining. We show them – you saw that, Mike? Did I show you that earlier? No, I was with you, Kenny. Mm-hmm. So what we do is when we walk through, we before we release a muscle or group of muscles, we actually take out an application. We actually go through it. We show them exactly what muscles we're going to release. We show them why. Like, I'll give you one here, abdominal wall. So
by the way, if you're listening on audio only right now, he has an iPad and he's showing us diagrams of anatomy and whatnot. So go watch the video.
So this is a... good one. So this is a abdominal wall. Most people think of abs as being up front here. It's our six pack. But this, if I isolate this and show it to you, look how far that sucker goes back.
Mm-hmm.
All the way. That's still my abdominal wall right there.
Yeah.
And then what's more importantly is I start peeling them back layers, and each layer has a different direction. Isolate it again. Look at that. It goes back further. And hide it. Isolate it again. And so what we do is we explain to people exactly how it works. Look how far back that goes. And then we get to, now here's my favorite part. Here's the 10 pack, right? Now, I don't know about you guys, but I traded my 10 pack in for a keg right after college.
Mm-hmm.
why have 10 when you can have one?
That's right.
And so this is what everybody thinks abdominals are.
Right, right.
But abdominals are the entire
That's
wall.
That's just a small piece.
Right. And so what we want to do is we want to show them this, then we do our work. We want to show them that, like, one of the major problems that people have is like tight adductors, right? But what adductor and which one's tight? So we're finding these patterns, like an adductor magnus is tight usually. And when it gets tight, what's interesting about this is this is the back view of an adductor magnus. There's three contact points here. So when this one shortens, it shortens here and it shortens here simultaneously. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Means it's also the vector or angle of force of that shortening is right there.
Yeah, Q angle.
And then what happens, we have a curving here, so it's another vector here. So the adductor, literally, if I was to pull it up, the adductor is trying to do this and this.
Yep, yep.
And you can't walk like that. So the compensation is it uses the shoulder and everything here picks it up and rotates it back. Oh. So now we have rotation in the body. I don't know what you guys have been taught, but when I learned biomechanics and I learned about the body, we didn't account for two of the biggest influences in the body: rotation and gravitational force.
And MC Hammer's old dance moves.
That's right.
For sure.
So rotation and you think about it. At sea level, we're walking around with approximately between gravitation and atmospheric pressure, 2,000 pounds of pressure on us. And we have that 2,000 pounds of pressure every day. And as we're standing up, all those muscles are actually literally fighting against gravity. So when one's tight, it doesn't do its job. All the other ones have to compensate. And if you start looking at that, so people say, well, I got this tightness right up here in my jaw. My SCM's tight. So what do you think's causing that? Well, that's going to be actually down here in these adductors. They're tight because if you think about gravity,
you're crazy.
Pulling down.
You're crazy.
But that's why, see, this whole re-looking at the body in a different way has helped us to understand the body literally in a different way, and that's what we do our therapy with, a new understanding. It's the way we see the body.
It's interesting. You went through Mike's SEM to get through his adductor when you were working with me, and all three of us, you put through the protocol of sticking the finger in the mouth into the back just behind the teeth and then pressing. For me, it was the iliacus and psoas that started to get released. And then one of your motion mechanics was sort of releasing that. And it took about two or three people to really get me to open up down there. And that was that was my sacred garden that needed a little bit of work. How are we going to get it in through the mouth? Okay. Didn't see that coming.
Well, see, the interesting thing
wait
was
till the next treatment.
On both of you two is that your atlas and your occipital had such a hold that your hips, the slight anterior tilt in your hips are more, not even anterior, it's more of a pull up. It looks anterior, but if I measured, a typical test would have showed you at neutral, but it's more pulled up. And as soon as we let go of your jaw, everything settled down, your posture changed. I guess they're going to see that on the picture, right?
Yeah.
The before and after pictures of us?
Yeah, I mean, I can show it here, too.
We'll be posting them. You want to just edit it in, Hunter? Yeah, he'll edit it in.
Oh, okay, he'll
edit
it.
So we don't need to look at it
awesome.
Right here.
Thanks, Hunter. You're awesome.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the chemical balances? I mean, obviously the digestion, sleep, and how you breathe is going to impact you hormonally and everything else. I see some bottles and some tinctures and some essential oils and some functional foods over there.
Yeah.
What are I'm assuming those all play a part in the biochemical balance?
Sure. Actually, first of all, let's talk about supplementation. What is supplementation? Supplementation is compressed and condensed food.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yep.
So food is our medicine, unequivocally. And when we take supplements, we're actually taking medicine. So our first and foremost, we don't believe in long-term supplementation. Once we get the body, we measure the body, see where it's out of balance chemically. Once we bring the body back into balance, and we use a lab, it's in Orange County, and they do subclinical testing. They're called Cure Ecology, and they're different because I think there's only about 150 practitioners right now using this. And one day I believe everybody will, all the practitioners. But when we do subclinical testing, the interesting thing that happens is it'll come up with a protocol of both diet and supplements. And that's usually for 90 to from 3 to 6 months. After that protocol, all the other things like the functional food items are the items that help keep us balanced, because mm-hmm. it's just hard. Our food supply is tainted. We don't have proper growing procedures. We grow out of season. We do all kinds of things that our bodies aren't meant to. So we use functional food items. I have a smoothie every day with some probiotics and nutrients in that smoothie. I take an adrenal support once, twice a week, just depending on my workload, mm-hmm. and aminos once in a while if I don't eat well, and that's it. And this is a divestiture from $600 a month worth of supplements for 10 years. So the idea is get the body back into balance. And part of what we use is we use the medication, which is supplements, to get the body back into balance. And keeping it in balance, interesting things, you can use essential oils. You can use functional food. You can use meditation. You can use yoga. All those things now have a real impact on the body where they're helping to correct or bring us back into balance. Because a lot of those things that we're doing right now, and the one thing I learned, the hardest point was in supplementation, is I used to bag on all the doctors because they're being educated by pharmaceutical companies, right? Then I had 2,000 hours in supplement nutrition training over the course of my life, continuing hours and courses and stuff like that. Only to realize when I did my first subclinical test and found out that I was whacked out too, that obviously something wasn't working. And then it dawned on me that actually the people that had provided my education were the supplement companies. So I was doing the same thing that the doctors were doing, that I was complaining that they were doing.
Right.
And so the idea is where we get our education is really important. And we're educated by media, and we're educated by people who have corporate interest. So the idea is to really understand how my body works and then be able to give it what it needs. And there's a variety of ways to get it there, but the first things first is that when your body's chemically and mechanically balanced, or as best it can be, then you know what good feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you know what good feels like, it's really easy to determine what bad feels like.
Yeah,
it's kind of like if you're going to break your diet, you know, like if you're exercising and you're dieting, if you're dieting, you want to exercise. And if you're exercising, you want to diet. But if you stop exercising, then heck with the diet, right? You're just competing. And that's the way our brains work.
Yeah. I've had many iterations of that. I think these two guys would agree, where we got to a new level of feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, how the fuck was I operating like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had people do that. You know, I've worked with athletes before where, like, yeah, just go from 6 to 8 hours of sleep. And 2 weeks later, you're like, what? Yeah. Or, like, let's just cut this one food out of your diet.
Yeah.
And it just blows their mind. And I remember one woman I was coaching at one point. She was like, oh, I thought my stomach was supposed to do that after I ate. Like,
right.
It was upset every time she ate.
Right.
And she thought that was normal. She cut out the gluten, and all of a sudden she was like, oh, wow, like when I eat, like it kind of just like, I don't have the stomach pain. Weird.
You know what? You're cutting on something that's really, really, really important. In society, we abdicated our rights to know our body to clinical professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And we no longer have the education or are willing to teach our kids what to do. So we teach our kids, like, I didn't know what a tummy ache felt like. And, you know, like little things, you're not supposed to like push when you take a bowel movement, you're supposed to let it come out. You know, like there's all kinds of little things, like one of our nutritionists, she's like, I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to push when I peed. And I was just supposed to let it flow. And there's all these little things because we're just not taught. And we're not taught because our system of education has, we know nothing about the body. We're taught that if we exercise and eat healthy, that we're maintaining our human vehicles.
Or if you live out in nature, you probably don't need the education. But because we're living in boxes,
yes,
the education becomes necessary.
I would actually slightly disagree or just modify that. I think we're...
You can't disagree with me, Kenny.
No. There's actually a ton of information. It's just hard to discern the information.
Fair enough.
I think that there's so many interests moving. Mm. Some uneducated, don't know, don't care. So there's that population. Then there's the population that cares. But then the population that cares has an enormity
too much
of
noise.
So much noise.
So the way it's supposed to work is my father as a child is supposed to teach me how my body works. My mother's supposed to teach me. And that education is supposed to happen, but it doesn't, because it's like when you're sick, you go to the doctor.
Mm.
And that's what we've always been taught. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about, well, we were talking off air about autoimmunity. One of the things that you were talking about earlier at the show that you said apparently ruffles some feathers, but I don't know if there's necessarily disagreement with these guys. It's just how much the body talks to the brain, because I know all three of us have been trying to study as much as we can the last several years on that relationship. I forget if it's 400 billion nerves connecting the stomach to the brain. I mean, that's just a starting point amongst many
others.
Okay,
but let's put it this way. Fascia covers every muscle, every organ, every tissue, holds roughly 75% of our nerve endings, about 75% of our lymph nodes, maybe thereabouts. I could be off on the numbers a bit, and holds most of the water in our body. So the fascia has 100 trillion cells.
That's a big number.
Yeah, well, it's about 1,000 times more than the brain or the gut.
Right.
You guys hear something. That this is what changed. I had only seen fascia in cadavers. And so in cadavers or in chicken, fascia kind of looks like the best way to describe it, I think, is fascia kind of looks like fat, right? But let me show you live fascia.
That video is great.
This is the – here, let's –
oh, now we're going to watch a
– we watch an ad.
Something for a pharmaceutical.
so apropos, right? So this is – whoops. This is the fascia magnified 25 times. Just go on Google or on YouTube and put fascia magnified 25 times. Looks like a spider web, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see how water is being carried through the fascia. And there's a fascial tubes and they're fibers and they carry water. They bind together. And this spider web of information, it's not just information, it holds the blood. You can see the blood passing through. And I'm going to move ahead a little bit further just for time's sake. And watch this. It shows how blood vessels are buried within the fascial net. See the blood vessels in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Now the interesting part. Here comes the best part. Let me show you where that fascia exists. This is the freaky part. This is a forearm of somebody's alive surgery.
Oh, wow.
Okay, now that's trippy, right?
Yeah.
So here's the deal, is that 60% of the fascia in our body is actually between your neck and your pelvic floor.
Mm.
And we think of the organs being all in there in stasis, but really what it is, it's like a spider web, and the organs and all everything's placed in that fascia. And that fascia is very sensitive. That's our body, okay? That's really our subconscious body, and according to Harvard. It's the fascia really is the connective tissue. Information travels network on fascia through at the speed of light, at speed of thought, so it's faster than the nervous system. And it even starts to come into question about the proprioceptive model of even walking. Right, the autonomic programs of walking requires proprioception. I put my foot down. If I don't get the right signal, something changes. My brain changes, and then I don't want to actually move the next foot. Mm-hmm. Or if you've ever stepped down a stair and missed it, you know, yep. And what happens? So the fascial network is sending information back and forth, you know, sometimes thousands of times before nerves are. So really, if we were to just take a look at that understanding and look at the fascia that way and say, how does that impact the muscle? How does it impact the way the brain proprioception works and information travels in the body? I just think that we've been looking at it the wrong way, and we don't have the answer either. But what we are using is we're using the information as it is right now to help people align and heal their bodies. And in doing that, we're having results because we're looking at the body a different way.
Porta Hemplo, one of the things we talked about right before the show is which way to push on muscle fibers. And that's, I think our audience can really connect to that. Could you kind of go into that a little bit?
You mean like for like a massage?
Massage.
Okay, so
if you want to use me, you can.
Okay, actually, why don't I use Mike this time because I did it.
Backfire. Right. He was like, please touch me.
Okay, please touch. So that should feel pretty good. And I'm communicating to your brain. I'm communicating, I'm saying open to the muscle, right? But as soon as I go this way, you'll feel it even go right up into splenic scapulus. You feel this going up, and then I go back this way. Oh, that's good. Mm.
It's like petting a dog.
Yeah, so like petting
a dog.
You
don't want to pet the dog the wrong way.
So what happens is that, you know, we've been told the massage towards the heart.
Right.
Traditional belief out there, we don't do that. We only massage in the line of fascia. So this feels good. Again, if I go this way, you'll start to feel it tightening up in the shoulders. So the idea is that in a massage, normal massages, they do petrissage and effleurage, and they're back and forth like this, and it's open, close. One of the interesting things is we designed a massage called Body Flow, and it only touches you only in the direction of the fascial lines. And at the
Keep going. Oh, okay. I have a question about that, though.
Okay, and then when you're done, the unique experience is everybody says, first of all, you can visually see the decompression in the body after a massage. But people get up and say, I'm really relaxed, but I want to go work out. Rather than I'm really relaxed, I want to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we're facilitating revitalization. And the reason why, and it's very, very different. You guys are going to have a chance to experience it here shortly. But when you have a Body Flow massage, it's completely different than any other massage. And we called it, we nicknamed it the best massage you'll ever have, because the first 100 people that came out, and continues to be years later, they say that's the best massage I've ever had. And it's not about the therapist, again. The therapists are great, but it's about the process. And that's what we really want.
You just talked about moving along the fascial lines and distinguishing between what we understand as sort of muscular massage versus fascial massage. But isn't fascia sort of interwoven in vertical and horizontal lines?
100%. And it's interwoven. It's in a muscle fiber. It wraps the actual fibers. It wraps the belly, and then it wraps all the muscle around it. It wraps the bone, and then it wraps the organs. It wraps everything. Basically, think of fascia as being your inside skin. So if you take off your skin and then shrink wrap the body, and that would be what fascia looks like.
Whoa.
So it is what you're getting at, Kenny. It's like if it's going every which way, every direction, so like how is going one way going with it and going the other way not going with it?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Or why not moving laterally?
No, okay, so there's lines. Okay, fascia has lines of force which maintain the posture and structure
force
of the body.
Line. Okay, force lines.
Okay, so,
got it.
So fascia is what maintains our posture and structure. It's actually the lines of force. And what you'll see in somebody is that they'll have a hip that's out, and all of a sudden you'll get a really tight line up through the obliques, and it looks, and you touch it, and you can feel it's hard. Just a line there, and that's actually because the hip wasn't working properly, and the body compensated by putting a line of fascia tightness there, so when it helps lift the hip. And so the fascia will adapt. Fascia is constantly adapting to the environment, and it's changing the way that the body structure. But you know, also you think about this. You have a knot in your shoulder, right? Why is that knot there? Knots have a very specific purpose in our body. That's our brain's best way of maintaining posture, alignment, balance, and control through all the compensations. That's what knots are. Mm. And so, you know, you go to a therapist and they say, oh, yeah, let me rub that knot out of your shoulder. If you don't understand why that knot is there and what it's connected to and how it's affecting your mechanics, rubbing it out is the worst thing you can do. Mm. So it's understanding, again, back to an integrated approach, understanding why we're touching the body, what the purpose is, what we need to touch, and when and what order. In releasing muscles and getting alignment is required. The order is super important. If the wrong order occurs, then the body fights you. So it's about being sequential and doing it within the lines of force.
Something super practical that you had mentioned, I think it might be worthwhile for some of the people that follow us, is that relationship between the soleus and the traps. Because a lot of people could be hearing you go, well, I mean, everybody that listens to this show has tight traps. So if you were to describe that very briefly, what would you?
Well, let's two things. Okay, first of all, anterior. One of the problems we have is sitting. So we sit. As soon as we sit, pull a chair over here. Wow, that sounds so different with a headset on. So as soon as we sit, this anterior chain is tightening. Fair statement. Mm-hmm. It's adapting. It's trying to. And the posterior chain is loosening. So when I get up, the first response is to go like this, right? Open up. When you've been sitting in a car for a while. And that's what we're fighting against. First of all the mechanics in the body are fighting against the sitting process because we weren't designed to sit. So that's first and foremost. And when we sit, what we're doing is is the muscles and the fascia shortening. So what's happening is the quads are tightening. As soon as the quads tighten, you think about this, it causes an anterior tilt. Mm-hmm. And if you put your hand on my trap, neutral, okay? Then anterior tilt, feel the trap engaging?
Yep.
So as soon as the reason why it happens is my brain, as soon as my hips go anterior, my brain thinks I'm going to fall over. So it starts engaging the posterior chain to keep me stable and in balance. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's trying to figure out the GCM.
So then on top of that, there's other lines of force that exist. That's the primary one that causes the traps to engage. So most people have tight neck, tight traps. And the primary reason is because there's the quads are too tight. And then the second part of it is there's parts of the calf, like the soleus itself, has a direct reflection really on the very top line of the trap muscle from the attachment up into the neck. And so when the soleus gets tight, we found this, like we had clients that come back with a repeating neck problem. And so our whole thing is if you have to come back to us, it's because we didn't do something right. And I don't mean like for, I mean if we have to come back to fix something. We expect people to get tune-ups, you know, like 1 to 3 or 4 times a year, depending on what kind of work they're doing. But if you're coming back to us and we're fixing something, it's mean because we missed something. So every time that somebody comes back to us, we document it, we look at it, and we try to figure it out. And we started noticing these patterns and behaviors between certain muscles in the calf and certain muscles in the shoulder. And so if you think about, we think about all these muscles being separate, but they're all covered by fascia, they're all connected in fascial lines. And all our fascial lines meet here on the palms, top of the head, right below the belly button, and at the bottom of the feet. So every fascial line in your body meets there. Consequently, when we were doing therapy on you, you were communicating with the fascial line. So that's why even stretching.
That was kind of funny. They're like, just rub your thumb. I was like,
oh, well, actually.
Okay.
Okay. Now, can we do something right now? Can we
sure.
Okay, grab that pillow there. This will be funny.
Do I get to hit it?
So, Mike, yeah, you can do that. Let's Mike, why don't you get down and do just a regular hip flexor stretch. And put this leg past 90 degrees. Okay, fall into your hip, forward. As far as you can go, get stretched. Okay? Now take and rub the inside of that thumb. Just rub it. Now keep pushing into that hip. Watch the hip open up. So the hip, you feel it? It's loosening up. Tell me that's not crazy. Now do one other thing. Take this hand, put it up like this, flex the palm back, lock the elbow, and slightly rotate the shoulder, going this way, kind of go like this. Now you're going to feel that in your hip there. You feel that?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're stretching the fascia, and the hand has to go back and lock the elbow. There you go. And now you're opening up the hip. Now stretch further. It's opening up the hip. Do you see that? Tell me that's not weird.
Quite a bit more. Yeah, that was a bigger difference than the thumb even.
But those are two fascial lines. One stretching, one is communicating, right? And so understanding how all those lines work. What we discovered this by accident. We were working on somebody, and
can we just go back and describe for people listening, just real quick?
Yeah.
So they put Mike on one knee.
Hip flexor stretch.
Into basic hip flexor stretch. Put his. Put his shoulder into flexion and then wrist into extension, flexion, and then he rubbed the inside of his paw, and then magic happened, and then
the other one was a rotation of the shoulder, but it has to be, if one rotation is loosening it, one rotation tightens the hip, so it's, and also the
wind and unwind,
and this wind and unwind, that's why we call our therapy unwinding and decompressing. And the other part about it is that the joints are connected, like your ankles and your wrists are connected, your elbows and your knees are connected, and your hips and your shoulders are connected. So when I have somebody who has problems with their, like say doing push-up, they can't flex their hands back, I can go work on opening up their ankles, and then they go back and all of a sudden they can move that hand again. So there's a relationship between all these different fascial lines in the body, and we're just beginning to understand, because this is only 6 months ago, and this was quite a shock to us when we discovered it. It put us on a new line of thought, and I hope even by communicating this to people that we're just about helping people understand the human body. And I know there's other people out there that are probably merging on or getting close to things that we're doing, or maybe even advanced and farther ahead of us. And I hope by even communication like this, we can bring a community of people together to help understand this, because our understanding of the human body is actually quite limited. And I think over the next 10 years, it's going to open up to ways that we never thought. We're just changing the paradigm. There was a time we thought the earth was flat. And if you can imagine being around a kitchen table talking to your kids about the earth being flat, can you imagine the conversations you have about their job, their life, where they travel, the moon, the stars, the sun, and then all of a sudden the earth is round, and it changes everything. Most of what we know about the human body is that the theory of how it operates hasn't really changed in 3,000 years. You know, the brain is in charge, the heart does this, the muscles do this. And we really haven't, we've just added more information on top of that current theory. But now it's time to change the theory. And instead of having a flat earth theory, we have a round earth. And instead of having a flat body theory, we got a functional round body theory. We just need to change the way we think of the body. And if we have that change in our mindset, we're going to discover new things. And that's what's happening every day here. It's not any one person in here that innovates. Our entire team innovates. And it's predominantly because of one of our values. Our second value in our business is always look for a better way. We assume nothing, make no assumptions, and we test everything.
What's the first value? You started with the second one.
Show caring in all that we do. We make things simple.
I noticed.
We make things simple.
Did a good job of that.
Yeah. Make things simple. Mm-hmm. We're honorable in all of our relationships. We're fanatical in completion, and we have fun. That's it. It's really simple. And you come in here, you guys saw this morning as we started to operate. It's not just you. It's because you're here. It's people have fun here. People coming in, sitting down.
I'm not special. No, it was a fun environment for sure. There was a lot of really good positive energy.
And people actually, one of their biggest problems is people want to come here and hang out. And we're limited in space. So we're moving to a new location sometime next 6 to 9 months, just depending on where we go and zoning and stuff like that. But we'll have a place big enough for people to sit and hang out.
People want to find out more about what you guys have going on. where should they go? Or maybe should they go nowhere?
Well, right now all we have is you can go to Facebook, and we just started Instagram a month ago. So we don't have a lot of information out there, but we're starting to craft information to help explain what we're doing and how way that we think. So you'll see us on our – we have a blog that's out. You can start reading it, and the content that goes into these posts and these blogs and stuff like that eventually starts to form our communication model, which is our website, our material, and stuff like that. But it's also new. So as you can experience, it's hard to explain what we do, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So instead of us trying to explain what we do, because there's no context for a reference, people go, is it chiropractic? Is it physical therapy? What is it? So we just let people give their experience.
I would assign this sort of sentence to it. It's a very useful, holistic approach.
Sure.
It's not completely binary. Like you might be coming back a week later banged up with the same things. It's like, you know, you're looking at this thing through a very comprehensive lens.
Yeah, yeah, and we're using the body to heal the body. Like, for example, the primary focus of our work is really simple. It's that your nervous system knows more about all the math and compensations than I ever could. So instead of me trying to tell your shoulder what to do, I present the problem that your nervous system has to resolve. And so what we do is we create a series of about 300 or 400 problems over the course of 6 treatments that the brain or the nervous system has to resolve. And the resolution is actually the compensation. And the compensation is the positive one. Because compensations don't have to be bad. They can be good too. And so that's how I describe what we do. We're producing logical problems that the brain has to solve.
Very cool.
Wow.
This video is going to be online for quite some time. You guys don't have a website up right now, but... Is that likely to change in the near future?
Yeah,
do you know what that address is going to be?
Oh, we have an address. It's a landing page. It's www.humangarage.net. Mm-hmm. And now eventually we'll put up content. But most of the content you're going to see is light descriptions of who we are, how to get to us. But mostly it's our client stories. Because, you know, what is it? What is the business? It's really just a collection of clients that have been served. And so, I mean, who really cares at the end of the day what we say? I can say all the things I want to say, but at the end of the result, just check with what our clients say, and that's really how you can measure us.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you.
It was
fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Fantastic.